The future is a hefty responsibility and not one that we take lightly. But then taking things lightly has never been what Hefty is about. That's why we've created the Hefty Renew program that turns hard to recycle plastics into valuable resources like park benches and building materials. To participate, simply fill up an orange Hefty Renew bag with accepted items, tie it up, and drop it in with your regular recycling. That's it. It's that easy. It's time to rethink recycling with Renew. Particular valued resources may vary by geography. More info available at heftyrenew.com.
Consider tripinsurance.com to cover your next cruise investment. Buy direct from the leading insurers and save up to 40% or more on comparable plans from the other sites. Get a quote today and save from tripinsurance.com.
At 9:30 at night, approximately 4,200 people live through their own Poseidon adventure.
A world turned upside down. A luxury cruise liner strikes a massive rock.
Semi-submerged, looking like a big beached whale.
Removing it is the biggest salvage operation the world has ever seen.
Cruise liner Costa Concordia ran aground off the Tuscan coast, killing 32 people.
Crews are searching for survivors from that cruise ship that ran aground and foundered on Friday night.
1 year since the Costa Concordia cruise liner capsized off the coast of Italy.
Remembering Costa Concordia, this is Cruise Radio.
Hey, I'm Matt Bassford.
And I'm Doug Parker. Check out our cruise news at cruiseradio.net.
An important show this week, as this past Sunday marks the one-year anniversary of the Costa Concordia disaster. We're honored to have two of the passengers from the ship, Benji Smith and Emily Lau.
Dan Askin, senior editor at cruisecritic.com. He'll be with us giving us his take. Also from a consumer standpoint, Vicky Garcia, the COO of Cruise Planners at American Express Travel, will give her view.
But first, director of public affairs for CLIA, and for those who don't know, that's the Cruise Lines International Association, Mike McGarry. Welcome to Cruise Radio, Mike.
Well, thank you very much. I'm glad to be here.
Mike, since the Concordia disaster a year ago, the Cruise Industry Operational Safety Review has been formed. Tell us, what is it and who's on the panel?
First of all, you know, let me just say that the Cruise Industry Operational Safety Review, which was a global effort that came about immediately following the Concordia, it's really a continuation of the industry's continuous efforts to look at best practices in safety and other operational areas. But it came about immediately following the Concordia as the industry's response to look at the critical human factors involved in the operational aspects of a cruise ship to see is there anything else we can be doing to try to make operations safer than they already are. And this is an exceptionally safe industry. The Concordia, as tragic as it was, and our thoughts and prayers continue to be with the victims and their families, it was really a very extraordinary event, and the industry has an exceptional safety record. And so with the operational safety review, there was a task force that was developed of CLIA member cruise lines who decided to look at best practices throughout various cruise lines to determine what best practices have been in place that we can have adopted as industry policies that everybody is going to follow. And the task force was supplemented by an independent panel of experts that included experts like Mark Rosenker, former chairman of the U.S. National Transportation Safety Board, Stephen Meyer, former rear admiral in the Royal Navy and head of the U.K.'s Marine Accident Investigation Branch, Dr. Jack Spencer, former director, Office of Marine Safety, United States National Transportation Safety Board, and finally Willem de Ruyter, former head and executive director of the European Maritime Safety Agency. So it was evenly divided between safety experts in the U.S. and in Europe who provided ideas and input. And the result of the operational safety review were 10 wide-ranging policies that go beyond existing international regulations.
The names you mentioned, those are the only members on the panel?
Those were the four members of the independent panel of experts.
Gotcha.
On the task force itself, there were more people.
What changes have taken place because of the operational safety review board?
The very first one was a change in a passenger muster policy, where the industry is regulated by the International Maritime Organization, which is based in London and is a United Nations agency. And the industry also follows safety of life at sea regulations, SOLAS. And under SOLAS, as it's known, cruise ships were required to conduct a muster drill, which is basically a drill where the passengers come together and they're shown where they get life jackets, where they go on the ship to gather in specific groups if an emergency is called. Cruise ships were, under SOLAS, required to conduct a muster drill or a safety drill with passengers within 24 hours after departure. Well, a number of CLIA members were actually doing those muster drills before a ship would leave port. And so the industry decided that should be an industry standard. It should be an industry policy. Yeah. And so they adopted that one. And then they put that forward to the IMO to be considered as a standard maritime regulation.
Mike, we know there were 10 safety policies brought forth in total. Touch on a couple of other ones.
There was a passage planning policy that was put in place so that the passage for a cruise ship is there are regulations for developing that and following that, and any deviation from that passage plan, there are certain procedures that would have to check and balance systems that would have to be done before there would be any deviation from that plan. There was an excess life jackets policy, which is probably self-explanatory, to make sure that you've got actually more life jackets on board than you do passengers. And there was also a policy regarding the access to the bridge, that only approved personnel would have access to the bridge, particularly in times of a crisis.
Was there anything about lifeboats, Mike?
Yes, there was a policy. There was a lifeboat loading for training purposes policy, but basically it was done to facilitate training for lifeboat operations. And the policy requires that at least one lifeboat on each ship is to be filled with crew members equal in number to its certified number of occupants at least every 6 months, and that they were to do that drill for training purposes.
You mentioned this earlier, Mike, and we talk about this a lot on Cruise Radio, how safe cruise ships actually are, but lots of programs, TV shows, articles, etc., have covered cruise ship safety since the sinking. What do you say to a potential cruise ship passenger who's fearful of cruising?
What I would say to them is that, cruise ships are extremely safe, and the industry is heavily regulated at multiple levels. All cruise ships must be designed and operate in compliance with the strict requirements of international law, as defined by the International Maritime Organization, the UN agency responsible for safety and security of shipping. Additionally, cruise ships are subject to multiple layers of enforcement at not only the international, but the flag state and the port state level. The Concordia was an extraordinary event. And the industry had not seen an event like that in almost a century. Cruising is one of the safest forms of leisure travel that we have today. There's absolutely no question about it. And safety, the other thing I would tell someone is safety is the industry's number one priority, bar none. There is no other area that is more important, because without safety, there is no cruise industry.
Right. Very well. Senior Vice President of Public Affairs for CLIA, Mike McGarry, thank you so much for the info. We really appreciate you being on Cruise Radio.
Thank you for having me.
I got to say, since the disaster, I honestly can say that I have not really heard a lot of people who are turned off of cruising, really.
Yeah, I've only heard of one person. A girl here at the radio station was going to book a cruise the Monday after Costa Concordia sank, and she wound up not booking. That's the only person I've ever heard of.
To speak on consumer trends post-Costa Concordia, COO of Cruise Planners American Express Travel, Vicky Garcia, joins us. Welcome back to Cruise Radio, Vicky.
Thank you so much, Matt.
When it happened, did you see an impact on bookings?
When it first happened, we really didn't see any kind of impact at all. And probably about 3 weeks, 4 weeks after that, we started to see a little bit of a blip, if you will. Seems that it affected some first-time cruisers from potentially taking that jump into cruising, because we were having a banner December and January leading up to it.
Yeah.
So we got a little bit of a slowdown shortly after that. But nothing too far, like a drastic thing, like God forbid when 9/11 happened years ago.
Vicky, how long did that lull in bookings last?
I think it kind of slowed down a little bit, probably through maybe June, but nothing substantial. I think the only reason we actually even noticed it was because it was so strong leading up to it, when you're looking at December and January. So, so it had an effect. I think it mainly had an effect on first-time cruisers, those existing cruisers. People like probably you and I, who just love it, and our clients, they, if anything, were almost a little bit bullish and wanted to go cruise to help the industry.
I'm kind of curious now, with it being the 1 year anniversary and some TV specials and documentaries running on certain networks, if that might remind certain people who are thinking about cruising, and might scare them away. What would you say to people who are hesitant to cruise?
You know, I think when you look at the safety records of cruising, it speaks for itself. I think it's isolated incidents. You know, people for the most part saw that it's not something that just happens every day. Gosh, I think it's a little more dangerous when I went across the street today to go to the bank across the street from my office than it is to go on a cruise. And I've cruised over 70 times myself and never even been in an emergency evacuation or loss of power or anything weird like that. So the likelihood of that happening, I think people are, you know, have common sense and realize that. So I don't think it's a big deal.
She is the Chief Operating Officer for Cruise Planners American Express Travel. Vicky Garcia, thank you for all the info.
Thank you, Matt. Appreciate it.
Cruise Radio News, now trending at cruiseradio.net.
Happy to have with us Dan Askin, senior editor at cruisecritic.com. Dan, I should say welcome back to Cruise Radio. You're no stranger.
Thanks. Yeah, I did. I talked about a sushi venue on Carnival Breeze. That was my first foray.
That was good stuff. Good times. You know, we just spoke with Mike McGeary with CLIA about the panel of experts that formed the Global Cruise Industry Operational Safety Review. In your opinion, how important were these changes to the cruise industry, and what safety policy changes really stick out to you?
Well, you know, obviously they had to come out very boldly and make a strong statement right away. And so they did it pretty systematically, and they started off with, as everybody knows who's been following this, the muster drill, which before was prescribed by this SOLAS regulations, Safety of Life at Sea. You have to perform this muster drill, this safety boat and lifeboat drill within 24 hours of passengers boarding. So obviously on Concordia, you had some passengers who got on the ship in Civita Vecchia. There were multiple embarkation points, and they hadn't had that briefing. And so now, relatively low-hanging fruit, but every line that within the CLIA umbrella now said, okay, we're going to have the muster drill before we sail. So everybody will know how to put on a life jacket, which is part of the drill, where their safety station is in the case of emergency, et cetera. So, I mean, that was the first kind of thing. It was easy. It was a low-hanging fruit because most lines already did that. Because if you think about it, most cruise ships are sailing round-trip from a single port. There are exceptions like Concordia, which was kind of operating on a ferry schedule, where you had three home ports, in essence, where people could get on and start their cruises. And so they were still following guidelines as prescribed by CLIA, because they were picking up people the next day in the next embarkation port, and they were going to have the briefing for both of those sets.
Right.
So that was the first change. And then, you know, every couple months we're seeing additional changes.
On the night of the anniversary on Discovery Channel, they had a really good documentary, and just harrowing accounts from the passengers. You know, I didn't know all the details until I saw that. You know, as far as passengers, when they were faced with, in the end there, having to jump off the ship and swim 100 yards to shore and stuff like that. But
in cold water, yeah.
Yeah, 59-degree water. Just crazy, crazy. But as you mentioned, yeah, the captain waited at like an hour before the abandoned ship. I mean there was a lot of time delays. Yeah. And I was curious if you knew anything regarding the trial on the captain and the other crew members.
So right now, the prosecution has asked for indictments from the judge, but it's on the judge right now in terms of deciding whether or not there's enough evidence and enough to go on to have the trial. But I think the expectations are that yes, that's going to move forward, but we're expecting to hear a response from the judge in the next couple weeks where that stands. So that's kind of where we're at. We had the pretrial hearing, and it's sort of in the next 2 weeks we're going to get some sort of concrete answer. But we have 9 people who could be indicted for actions.
The uninjured passengers of Costa Concordia received $14,500 in compensation. From what you're hearing and seeing, do most people think that's fair?
My experience, we actually had a reader who was on the cruise who she wrote kind of an essay about what she's been struggling with in the last year. Her moniker on Cruise Critic is Mickey D. Mouse, and she told us about firsthand experience during the event, and now for the last year it's been obviously emotionally incredibly difficult for a lot of these people, her as well. And she did talk about how there was some negotiation that was higher than that initial offer from Costa.
Right.
Costa's put out some numbers in terms of, I don't have those offhand, but it's the majority of people have settled with the line. We're not really privy to details. She did say it was incredibly difficult, just the communication. They were passing her around, and it was obviously incredibly stressful. And she did not personally join in a lawsuit, or a lot of the people were trying to bring suit in the United States.
That was my next question. How many lawsuits were there? Because, I mean, if they had offered $14,500 after what I saw in the documentary of what they went through, I'd be like, you got to be kidding me. And I would imagine everyone's got a lawsuit.
According to Costa, of the 3,055 passengers who survived and were not physically injured,
yeah.
So you have just over 3,200 passengers, just over 1,000 crew, and 32 perished, and 159 were hospitalized, according to the numbers that I've seen.
Yeah.
And so of the 3,055 passengers who survived and weren't injured, 70% accepted Costa's offered compensation or alternative proposal. So I'm not sure, I haven't seen reported, you know, what percentage of that 3,055 renegotiated something higher and what percentage took what you just mentioned, that initial offer.
So we've heard by now that this is one of the largest salvaging efforts in maritime history, and it's never really been done before. Now, certainly that accounts for the delays, but is there anything else causing delays?
To my understanding, it's the scope of the project that's really responsible for the delay. You can put together plans that are immaculate, and you're going to obviously have to adapt. And I know that the price of the wreck removal has ballooned, last reports, to about $400 million. Mm-hmm. That's up, I think, over about 30% higher than the initial estimate. And then they're also saying that, you know, they're trying to hedge further, Titan and Micropierre, by saying that sea conditions are going to probably become more difficult the next few months. It's kind of a rough sort of pre-tourism season. It gets kind of choppy in that area, and it could further impact. This is really slow going, especially, you know, for these divers. They can't be underwater that long.
Right.
And it is they're working 24 hours around the clock. They've built this massive, I don't know if you've seen the pictures, they're really incredible, this huge platform they've built next to it.
Yeah, incredible. I mean, the fact that they've never done anything like that before, and it is the largest effort in history, you're going to expect a little bit of delay there. Thanks for all the info. Dan Askin, senior editor at cruisecritic.com. As always, it's a pleasure talking to you, man.
Yeah, you too.
This is Cruise Radio.
For over 42 years, Park West Gallery has introduced over 1.3 million people to fine art. Here's what actual customers are saying.
I've been collecting with Park West 5-6 years now.
6 years.
9 years.
10 years. Everybody we meet at Park West makes you feel comfortable. You're part of their family.
It is an exciting and fun experience. It is enjoyable, uplifting.
Park West has been so kind to us. Park West makes us excited to spend money on art.
To find out more about Park West Gallery, visit parkwestgallery.com or go to cruiseradio.net and click on the Park West Gallery icon. It's not just a good idea to have travel insurance during the winter months or hurricane season. Every travel agent or travel expert we talk to says it is a very smart idea to always travel with travel insurance.
That's why you should check the folks out at tripinsurance.com. They have exclusive products from the leading travel insurers that you won't find anywhere else.
Yeah, they are the low-cost leader in travel insurance with savings up to 40% or more when you compare similar coverage from other sources.
What plan do you want to go with? Good, better, or best? They have coverage in all three categories that make it easy to find the right insurance plan for your budget.
You know what defines great customer service? Actually being able to talk to a human being. And they do that at tripinsurance.com. They are committed to great customer service with 24/7 telephone support before, during, and after your trip. You can also file claims online right on their website, and they keep you posted of any travel alerts that could affect your travels or safety at your destination. Check them out right now. TripInsurance.com.
Stream us worldwide on our free iPhone app. Just search Cruise Radio Live in your app store.
have saved the very best for last, and we are honored to have our next guests who were honeymooning 1 year ago on the Costa Concordia, Benji Smith and Emily Lau from Boston. Welcome to Cruise Radio.
Thank you. Thank you for having us.
I can't even imagine, you know, the horror of living through that event, but then to be approached by television stations and radio stations and to have to relive it in the retelling, I know that's got to be really, really hard on y'all. Or it could be therapeutic. I don't know.
I guess when we got home from the disaster, we were really quite disturbed. We were really, you know, our brains very fried. We had been through a really traumatic experience and needed some way to learn to cope with it. And we found a really excellent PTSD therapist in the Boston area who we worked with for about 4 months to help us overcome the painful, traumatic elements of the story to the point where we could talk about it. And that really launched us into the process of writing this book and of Emily composing this music, because we wanted to take this experience and turn it into something meaningful that we could share with people. And so not only to tell them the details of the sinking ship and how we got off of it, but also to give people some semblance of hope for how they can cope with tragedy in their own lives.
And so from that healing process, you write the book entitled Abandoned Ship, An Intimate Account of the Costa Concordia Shipwreck. Tell us more about the book.
There were actually a lot of parts of the story that weren't covered widely in the traditional press when the catastrophe first happened, and we wanted to pay particular attention to those elements of the story, one of which being immediately after the shipwreck, when we first got back to dry land, we called the United States Embassy to ask for help, and I called and said, there are 120 Americans who have been on this ship, and none of us have any. We've all lost our passports and our wallets, our money. We don't have a place to stay. We don't have food to eat. We don't have clothes to wear. We haven't been to a doctor. We haven't been to a psychiatrist. Can you help us with some of these basic necessities? And the United States Embassy said, if you come to us before 5 o'clock, we will print you a new passport. But they were unable to provide any of that additional help. And so we had to turn to other individuals, the kindness of strangers, basically. Huh. And then when we came home and there was a congressional hearing on cruise ship safety, Emily called the congressman and offered to testify in that hearing, because our experience in particular was so dramatic that we were surprised when they said, no, thank you. We have all of the witnesses that we need. So these parts of the story, the failure of these institutions, as well as the Italian police, Costa Cruises, these parts of the story were never told, and we really wanted to bring those forward and bring light to them. So that's part of the reason why we wrote this book and produced this music.
Take us back to that night, if you will, from both Emily, your perspective, and you, Benji. But what stands out to y'all the most from that night?
What I remember most is there was a moment where we were up on the fourth deck waiting for a rescue boat, and everyone was pushing and screaming and being really scared. And I was at the very end of the line, so I looked at Benji and I said, hey, Benji, I don't want to push. Is that okay with you? And he said, yeah, that's okay with me. And so we were both at the very end of the line, not pushing, and I told him that we might die. And is that okay with you? And he said, yes. So we were just both waiting and holding hands. And at that moment, I knew that I married my soulmate.
Wow.
So after that, we got onto that lifeboat. But the lifeboat wasn't able to deploy because the ship was listing so severely by that point
right. That
the lifeboat was just banging against the ship. And they had to hoist it back up to where we started. And we all got back off the lifeboat and onto the cruise ship again. So at this point, about 90% of the passengers have escaped on lifeboats, but we've been left behind. So we had to fend for ourselves, and we scrambled around looking for some place to go. Eventually, we found a rope and tied that rope to a railing. The we realized that the floor we were standing on was turning into a wall, and that if we didn't move, we could be trapped in the kind of a canyon created on the side of the ship there. So we tied this rope and rappelled from the fourth deck down to the third, which also had an open deck, and then tied the rope again and rappelled from the third deck down the whole of the ship.
Good Lord.
We held on to that rope for 3 hours waiting for rescue. But being able to see, you know, my new bride here with me, grabbing onto a rope, climbing over the railing, and being willing to take such decisive action, it was, you know, I was so proud of her and so proud of, you know, us as a family. It brought us so close together.
Yeah,
despite the fact that, you know, we had to basically say goodbye to each other. We were afraid that we might die. But certainly having survived that experience brought us much closer together.
Talk about a test for the rest of your marriage. I mean, if y'all can make it through that, holy cow.
It was just so scary. It was really scary to be there. Like, I remember thinking, if this thing dropped, we will all die. And nobody seemed to know what they were doing. The crew was clueless, and there were no drill. So at that point, I just knew we are really not in good hands.
Benji, you mentioned how that experience has brought you all closer together and made you both stronger. In what other ways are y'all different now?
It gives us the courage not only to encounter other sorts of difficulties in our life, but it also gives us the courage to stand up and say, this is important. The cruise company failed us. The U.S. Embassy failed us. The Italian police failed us. The U.S. Congress failed us. And while the majority of our story, we try to tell a hopeful, uplifting message. But we also want to point out those people who are responsible and to call them out on their actions.
Knowing what you know now, what would you have done differently during the trip and the ship sinking?
To be very honest, there was nothing that we could have done that could have changed the outcome. We were really good rule followers. We would have followed the rules and evacuated accordingly if we were instructed to do so. But unfortunately, there were no rules and there were no instructions, so we were forced to have to improvise. And that really was just a very sad occasion.
What advice do y'all have for anyone traveling internationally?
I would say make sure to have a copy of your passport. Make sure when you travel abroad to have someone back at home who can run logistics for you if you have a disaster. The biggest lessons aren't the ones in like how to plan your trip or how to prepare for disaster, but how to stay calm in the face of disaster, perhaps.
If he was sitting right in front of you, what would you want to say to the, I should say, ex-captain now?
What I would say to the captain is, I forgive you.
That's huge. That's that takes a lot. That's that's hard to do, and I commend you for that for sure. Will y'all ever cruise again?
It's possible. I think there are certain places that are best seen, or possibly only able to be seen by cruise ship. You know, if we ever wanted to go see the Galapagos Islands, the only way to do that is on a cruise ship. The coast of Alaska, I've heard, is really nice cruising. I don't know if we would take this kind of really gigantic cruise again, but I wouldn't rule anything out. That's another part of recovering from a disaster, is that you realize this is just an accident. All cruise ships don't sink, and cruising can be fun.
The book Abandoned Ship, an intimate account of the Costa Concordia shipwreck by Benji Smith, and the CD Isle of Lucidity by Emily Lau. Thank y'all so much for taking the time to share the experience with us. I know it's really difficult to do.
Thank you for having us.
Thank you.
Find out more about the book and the CD at cruiseradio.net. We leave you with a selection from Emily Lau's CD, the track entitled Ayúdame, available on iTunes.
Cruise Radio remembers those lives lost in the sinking of Costa Concordia, January 13th, 2012.